What's up, guys? Brendan Boylan here, host of the Who Dat Discussion. You can also find all of my other New Orleans Saints work over at the Saints News Network on SI.com. You can go ahead and type it in your search bar. It's www.si.com/NFL/Saints. Make sure you follow us for all of your Saints news this season. John Hendricks, Bob Rose, Kyle T. Mosley, and myself. We're excited for what is to be a very exciting 2021 NFL season. The Saints certainly proved that to all of us with that monstrous Week 1 victory over the Green Bay Packers by the final score of 38-3. But today we want to preview Week 2 of the NFL season. The New Orleans Saints are going to come to my neck of the woods, Charlotte, North Carolina. They're going to take on the Carolina Panthers. We also have a few updates and a few little bits and pieces of news. The Saints are reuniting with a former member of the team, have some COVID concerns, and of course that Week 2 preview all coming up. But first, let's hit the intro.
All things New Orleans Saints.
This is Who Dat Discussion.
Who Dat? Who Dat? Who Dat? Who Dat? Who Dat say they gonna be them Saints?
Powered by Overtime Media.
All right, guys, so a few nuggets for you before we dive into my things to watch, score predictions, etc. For Week 2 against the Carolina Panthers. Let's start with the good news first. The Saints reuniting with a familiar face. Yes, the Saints have signed former wide receiver Kenny Stills to the team's practice squad. There is the expectation that he will be eventually elevated to the 53-man roster, and this was a guy that I had my eyes set on early in free agency as a guy that would be a really good fit for what the New Orleans Saints want to do. Obviously, that down-the-field speed might not be where it was in Stills' early years in New Orleans, but especially for how the field's going to stretch out a little bit more with the arm strength of Jameis Winston and some of that familiarity that Stills has with Sean Payton and his system, I think a lot of it made sense. That reported on Monday by NFL Network that Stills was going to join the team's practice squad. They hosted a few receivers on Monday following their victory in Green Bay, just trying to get some depth there. I mean, that's an issue we've talked about all offseason prior to the Michael Thomas injury, that the Saints didn't have a lot of depth and a lot of veterans at the wide receiver position. And yes, you had Deonte Harris with that incredible 55-yard touchdown, just throwing on the afterburners and showing off that marvelous speed that he possesses and what makes him such a skilled return man and so dangerous in open space. You have Marquez Callaway, who had a phenomenal preseason, grading out as Pro Football Focus's highest rated offensive player at over 95 as his PFF grade. But he's going to start drawing a lot of attention because of the good preseason, because he is the Saints' number one corner. He's going to draw the opposing team's best defensive back. So the Saints just trying to find some ways to get some other guys involved. And Kenny Stills is a familiar face and a guy that could very well fit this New Orleans Saints team. He's 29 years old. Remember, the New Orleans Saints drafted him back in the fifth round in the 2013 NFL draft. Only spent two seasons in New Orleans, but remember that rookie year had five touchdowns, 640-plus receiving yards, and had a reception in 15 of the 16 regular season games. And then after that really good rookie season, you saw Stills' role just grow, and he blossomed in 2014, leading the team in receiving yards with 931, and again, registered to catch in 15 of those 16 contests. But that 2014 still marks Stills' career highs in receptions and yardage. Stills was traded to Miami early in the 2015 offseason. They got back Ellerbe, the linebacker, and then a third-round draft choice that was used eventually on P.J. Williams, who's been with the team for quite a while. And then Stills had a couple different pit stops since then. He was in Miami, the team New Orleans traded him to. He had a stint with the Texans and then was the was a free agent. And like I said, a guy that I had my eyes out on, I was a little surprised to see Stills still a free agent going into week one of the regular season, but he was flat out released by the Texans. And that's one thing that I think I like to at least remind all fans is there is a reason someone gets cut. There's a reason someone stays in free agency. You know, this isn't like Madden where we can just add and drop guys left and right for no apparent reason or just because or what have you. This is a situation where the NFL is a business, and these scouts, these GMs, these front office guys, they see things that fans don't see. They see things that even we in the media don't see. And though Kenny Stills on paper seems like a guy that could still certainly help a team, I mean, in 2020, he finished with 51 receptions for 705 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, that's still an effective and efficient NFL receiver, but obviously there was things that, like I said, fans don't see, we in the media don't see, that the front offices see, and that's the reason that Stills was available. But he provides another deep threat. He provides some veteran leadership for a group that could certainly use it. I mean, you look at the active roster for New Orleans, and you have two receivers that have played in the league a while, one being Ty Montgomery. He was with the team last year, but remember last year for Ty, he was really more of a running back than he was a receiver, makes that transition back to being a full-time receiver. And then you have Chris Hogan, who bounced around, and before he signed with New Orleans, what was he doing? He was playing in a major league lacrosse league. So at least with Kenny Stills, you bring some more veteran leadership, a guy that knows the system, and a guy that could pose a threat downfield with a strong-armed Jameis Winston. So I'm certainly excited for Kenny Stills to return to New Orleans and see what he can do. But again, as of right now, he's on the practice squad, eventually expected to come up and be a part of the 53-man roster. Remember, with the rules from last year rolling over this year, the Saints can elevate however many practice squad players up to the active roster before a game. And I don't know if that's going to be this week for Kenny Stills. It might be next week. But I would certainly expect Kenny Stills to be on the active roster and be a guy that contributes to the Saints moving forward. By the time you're listening to this on Friday, I can confirm that Stills did practice with the team on Thursday, and that, I believe, was his first practice since rejoining the team. Now we have a couple issues of bad news. I wanted to hit you with the positives first. Some of the bad news: 8 confirmed COVID cases for the New Orleans Saints. 6 of those offensive coaches, a nutritionist, and Michael Thomas, the lone player that tested positive for COVID-19. So the Saints without 6 offensive coaches testing positive for COVID-19. As of right now, it's head coach Sean Payton, Pete Carmichael, the offensive coordinator, Ronald Curry, and Zach Streif. Those are the only 4 offensive-minded coaches, if you will, that have not tested positive. And Coach Payton makes a funny remark, and for the people that know me personally, they know how much I enjoy soccer or football as well as the NFL, the NBA, so many different sports that I just love and enjoy. Payton said it's like Ted Lasso, the hit show on Apple TV. He says the rest are up in their hotel rooms doing the best they can with preparation, and so much so that former left tackle Jermon Bushrod is actually serving as the quote-unquote interim tight end coach for the New Orleans Saints. So a lot of questions in the air to what coaches will be available on Sunday, what kind of role they will have. But as of right now, the Saints working with just 4 offensive-minded coaches, really just 3 offensive coaches and head coach Sean Payton going into this week. So we'll have to see how the game plans are and how they adjust. But at the end of the day, let's remember that these players, they're professionals. Yes, they need direction. Yes, they need coaching. But these guys are expected to lace them up and suit up every Sunday and do their job, because as many coaches say, once the guys are out there, the coaches are just there to put them in the best positions possible. Once they're out there, it's all on the players. And this is going to be a situation where the guys, yes, once they get out there, it's all on them, but it's going to be even more on them to prepare and put themselves in the best positions, because you don't have the coaching staff there to necessarily be there and help you as much as normal. The other bad news, but I say bad news, but Lattimore was in practice on Thursday. Lattimore undergoes thumb surgery. If you guys recall, Lattimore late to come out and join the team in the second half. The Saints actually played a defensive series or two without Marshawn Lattimore, one of those resulting in an interception. I think both, actually, the first two series of the second half resulting in interceptions, one by Paulson Adebo and one by Marcus Williams. And then Lattimore returned with a cast on his hand. He underwent some thumb surgery, returned to practice on Thursday, limited basis. And I would imagine he will try to give it a go this Sunday. But, and they made a good point on the Fox broadcast, even on Sunday, when you do have one hand wrapped up that way, yes, you're able to punch the ball away, knock the ball away, but it becomes a lot harder to intercept the ball, and that does have some disadvantages, because you might have a play where the ball's thrown right at Lattimore, and he's going to have a lot more difficult of a time trying to catch that football with a cast on. But Lattimore undergoes surgery, looks like everything was successful, return to camp. Obviously, the bigger concern is going to be the eight members of the Saints that tested positive. As again, it was six coaches all on the offensive side of the ball, one nutritionist, and then Michael Thomas tested positive. Thomas obviously out as he begins the season on the physically unable to perform list, and that'll put him out until at least week six. Week six is the Saints' bye week, so should be set to return week seven for the New Orleans Saints. Well, before we dive into my keys to victory against the Carolina Panthers, my things to watch, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Who Dat Discussion podcast. All right, guys, so we got all of the news out of the way regarding the New Orleans Saints over the last few days since the last time I spoke to you guys. That podcast dropped on Tuesday, a recap of week one. So over the last few days, had a couple big pieces of news. Glad we got those all knocked out. So let's go ahead and shift our focus to Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern time, 12 o'clock Central. The Saints match up in Charlotte, North Carolina against the Carolina Panthers. And it's going to be an exciting one, right? You have a divisional matchup early in the season. Both teams 1-0. It's one of, I believe, three matchups against with two teams that are undefeated after week number one. And let's be honest, the Saints, maybe the most impressive win across the NFL in week one. The Panthers struggled a little bit in the second half, and though the score was 19-14, I don't think the score fully reflects how dominant they were against the New York Jets. But it's a new era in Carolina with Sam Darnold, as they traded away a Saints fan favorite in Teddy Bridgewater. He was sent to Denver for a sixth-round pick in the offseason. Sam Darnold, the former Jets first-round selection, he has the reins, the keys to the kingdom, if you will, for the Carolina Panthers. He does link up with an old friend in Robbie Anderson, a guy that I really wanted the Saints to go after two off seasons ago. Instead, the Saints got Emmanuel Sanders. That ended up working out very well, but Robbie Anderson actually caught a touchdown pass this past week from Sam Darnold on a deep ball. It was his 10th touchdown of over 30 yards, second most in the league since he entered the league. So Robbie Anderson, a big deep threat, rekindling with a familiar friend in Sam Darnold. But listen, this is a completely different Panthers team than last season, and I've been open and vocal about how I felt that Teddy Bridgewater got the short end of the stick because he played 13 games last season without Christian McCaffrey, who is one of the best running backs in all of football. And how about the running back matchup that we have between Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey? Since those guys entered the league in 2017, it is actually, the list goes Ezekiel Elliott, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey for total yards from scrimmage. And remember, Kamara and McCaffrey both missing time over the years. Kamara in 2019 missing some games because of injury and playing through an MCL tear. And then you had McCaffrey, who missed majority of last season, 13 games for the Carolina Panthers. So if those guys were both healthy, you're probably seeing them 1 and 2 on this list. They're all pretty close, those three, in Elliott, Kamara, and McCaffrey. So a great running back matchup, and we have previews of the running game and the passing game over at Saints News, si.com/NFL/Saints. Some great stuff from Bob Rose. We have a first look analysis from our beat writer, John Hendricks. But I want to talk to you guys about three things to watch and my three keys to victory. My first thing to watch is certainly what I was just talking about, that running back matchup with Kamara and McCaffrey. Have we ever seen a draft where you had two guys selected into the same division that were such similar players with some incredible gifts? I mean, Christian McCaffrey, the fourth player in NFL history to go 1,000 rushing yards and 1,000 receiving yards in the same season. I mean, Roger Craig was the first to do that in the 80s with the San Francisco 49ers, and this is a different tangent, but let's put Roger Craig in the Hall of Fame. I think that's going to be a different tangent for a different day, but I mean, McCaffrey just showing how versatile, and he really carried the Panthers team in 2019 before he had a 2020 that was filled with injury. But just an incredible talent, a guy that was picked in the top 10. There were some rumors back in 2017, the Saints were looking to move up in the draft and potentially take Christian McCaffrey. They end up moving back up in the draft in the third round to take Alvin Kamara. And I'd say that worked out pretty well. Kamara winning the 2017 Offensive Rookie of the Year, four-time Pro Bowler. I mean, honestly, at this rate, both these guys, McCaffrey and Kamara, more than likely going to end up in Canton. I'll knock on wood, but they've had a terrific start to their NFL careers. And like I said, both those guys are going to be focal points of the offense on Sunday because they're not just runners. They're both excellent in the passing game. They're both going to be terrific outlets for their respected quarterbacks. Remember, both quarterbacks in this matchup too, making just their second starts with their new teams in Jameis Winston and Sam Darnold, both high draft picks in their respected draft classes, both getting a second chance in the NFL with a new team. So there's a lot of similarities offensively. That's my first thing to watch, just how both these running backs set the tone offensively for this game and how creative the play calling gets because you're able to move these pieces around. It's going to be fun to watch, and it's going to be fun to watch for years to come, just seeing how Kamara and McCaffrey match up when they're playing against each other and how similar the game plans are. My second thing to watch is going to be on the defensive side of the ball for the Carolina Panthers. Now, the Panthers did a really good job of getting pressure on a young quarterback in Zach Wilson, making his NFL debut on the road. That's never easy, right? But when you go back and you watch the tape, the Panthers had some trouble, particularly with Corey Davis, who joined the New York Jets in the offseason. His ability to stretch the field, get downfield, there was one particular play in the first half. Wilson threw a ball deep downfield, and I couldn't quite tell if it was Wilson anticipating Davis to go over the other shoulder, or if it was just a little underthrown or off-thrown, and Davis had to make the adjustment and couldn't bring it up. The grab, that is. But right from the jump, you could see that the Panthers were struggling with that vertical field threat, and especially when Wilson can get out of the pocket and buy some extra time. I mean, that's what made him so talented and so special at BYU and the reason he was the number two overall selection in this last April draft. But I'm definitely watching to see how Deontay Harris and how Jameis Winston attack this defense that struggled last week in defending the long ball. Because for the first time in a while, and there was a stat that came up in Saints Twitter, and I know lots of you saw it, was that, well, Jameis Winston had that touchdown pass to Harris against the Packers in Week 1 that traveled 50 air yards, and how Breeze had never done that in his Saints career with over 9,000 passing attempts. And while that stat might not have been recorded during Drew's time, at least early in New Orleans, I think anybody that's watched the Saints from 2006 on, since Drew first put on the black and gold can say, no, there were definitely some throws where the ball traveled 50 air yards, because I think a lot of people forgot, but Drukah ripped that thing. And especially those hidden years, at least I call them the hidden years, the lost years, 2012 through 2016. I mean, look at some of those throws he made to Brandon Cooks. I brought up Kenny Stills. There's one in my mind against the Bears to Devery Henderson. I don't remember what year that was. But man, Drew definitely has some throws that went over 50 yards. But back to the normal topic. I mean, Jameis brings a whole different element, a whole different layer to this playbook and this offense, one that probably needed to be dusted off this offseason. You know, it's been sitting back there, but Sean Payton gets to dust it off and reopen it for the first time in a few years, knowing that, hey, we can push the ball downfield a little bit. So how does Sean Payton and Jameis Winston attack this defense that showed a little bit of weakness on the deep ball, especially to a young quarterback? And you have a little bit of a more experienced quarterback with Jameis Winston. How does he move up in the pocket to buy more time, create an extra second, not get knocked off his spot, and just deliver a beautiful deep ball? Because we all know that Jameis Winston can. So that's my second thing to watch, is how do the Saints attack this defense that clearly struggled covering the deep ball last week? And my third thing to watch is how dominant can the Saints defense be in back-to-back weeks? Because I wrote it in a piece that I don't think any of us projected the Saints defense to be quite that good in week number one. The offensive hype was definitely real. That was in my takeaway article on Saints News Network, and on that my last podcast here with the Who Dat discussion they lived up to all the offseason hype, and I don't know if I took that lightly, but they were really good. And going back and watching the tape, and I said it on the last podcast, that Quan Alexander was fantastic, you know, 8 months removed from an Achilles tear. But there's one particular play, and it was in the first half. It was third down, and it was a double crossing route, and you could see Quan Alexander gets caught up in some traffic and makes this sideline-to-sideline run to stop Aaron Jones short of a first down. And you're like, wow, that's just an incredible football play. Like, wow. And then you go, wait a minute. That guy tore his Achilles 8 months ago. Like, there's no way he should be doing that. And Quan played great. I mean, I highlighted Paulson Adebo for stepping up and playing great. The pass rush was great. But remember, the Saints have quite a few guys on the injury report as well. Like I said, by the time you guys are hearing this on Friday, looking at Thursday's injury report, you have Quan Alexander, who didn't practice, Marcus Davenport, Passanio didn't practice, Eric McCoy, Pete Warner, CJ Gardner-Johnson, Chase Hansen, and then you had PJ Williams and Lattimore, who are both limited. So there's some questions to who's going to be available for the Saints this week. But how does the defense step up and respond to what was an excellent, and when I say excellent, I mean truly excellent, a performance in week number one against the Packers? I mean, I think it starts up front. Have to put some pressure on Darnold. And then I mentioned at the top, you have two fantastic running backs in this game in Kamara and McCaffrey. And if Quan doesn't give it a go, who covers Christian McCaffrey out of the backfield? Is it going to be DeMario? Is it going to be Quan? Is it going to be CJ Gardner-Johnson, CD Deuce? Who's it going to be? And how do you make Darnold in this offense uncomfortable? I think that's my third thing to watch, because how many times have we seen it in the past, not just with the Saints, but just football in general, where a team, either offensively or defensively, comes out and has a stellar, just absolutely stellar performance, and then they're flat the next week. So my thing to watch is, can the Saints get off to a hot start defensively, get off the field quick, put their offense in good positions, win the field position battle? Can the Saints not start flat defensively in week number two? So now we move into my keys to victory. opposed to my three things to watch. And my first key to victory is going to be getting receivers involved. You look back to week one against the Green Bay Packers, and Marquez Callaway pretty quiet in that game. One catch for 14 yards, but the Saints had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different guys with a reception. Now, only 1, 2, 3, 4, if you count Montgomery as a receiver, which I guess, as I said earlier, he's made that transition back, only 4 of them receivers. That was Harris, Callaway, Hogan, and Montgomery. And 3 of those guys only had 1 catch. Callaway, 1 catch for 14. Chris Hogan, 1 catch, 10 yards, had the touchdown. And then 1 catch for Ty Montgomery for 5 yards. So how do the Saints get other receivers involved? That's going to be a key to victory. Because you know a lot of the defensive attention is going to go on Alvin Kamara, just like it did last week. And the Packers did a great job of holding Kamara in check in terms of the passing game. Kamara only had 3 receptions for 8 yards, did have 83 yards on the ground with an average of almost 4.5 yards per carry. But how do the Saints get these other receivers involved? They did a good job using the tight ends. 6 receptions between Juwan Johnson and Adam Troutman. Troutman led the team in targets with 6. You look at the Panthers defense, and the linebacking spot is actually pretty good. I know a lot of people think, oh, well, Luke Kuechly, and how do you recover from that? And it's hard. I mean, Luke Kuechly is one of the smartest linebackers, and I think Drew Brees even called him the smartest linebacker he's ever played against. But Shaq Thompson, super athletic. And then you look at the edge guys for the Panthers, guys that came in as outside linebackers and now have their hand in the dirt, and you look at Hassan Reddick, who just came over, had a double-digit sack season last year, and you have a guy like Brian Burns, who's just phenomenal. I mean, you know there's going to be pressure on Jameis Winston. So how do you get other receivers involved? How do you get the ball out quick? And how do you instill some confidence in a really young group? I mean, that's been the thing, right? They're so young. Harris, he's been in the system for a couple years now. He's in his third season with the Saints, but really didn't get a full season at receiver last year. This is the first time we're really seeing him be a potential full-time receiver. Marquez Callaway, yes, impressive his rookie year, but didn't even crack 300 yards. I think only had 21, 22 receptions his rookie season. Still young receiver in the league. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Chris Hogan was playing lacrosse before he joined New Orleans. Then you have Ty Montgomery, who's just making that transition back to receiver. So I know Kenny Stills is going to help. I don't know if Kenny Stills is going to be a real option against Carolina, but how can the Saints get more receivers involved in the passing attack, and how smart are they with the tight ends, especially, like I said, because Kamara is going to get a ton of defensive attention. So that's my first key to victory. Get receivers involved early and often. Remember, Jameis Winston only attempted 20 passes last week, and anytime that Winston only attempts 20 passes, the Saints win by 35, I mean, that's like a 1 in a million type of a thing. That's not going to be a week-to-week thing, more than likely. So get some guys involved early, get Jameis in a rhythm, get those receivers in a rhythm, and just keep it rolling. Second key to victory is going to be contain Christian McCaffrey. Now, remember, in the last podcast, I talked about how the Saints made Green Bay one-dimensional by taking Aaron Jones out of the game. I think it's really easy to point and just say, well, just mimic that. Well, I thought it was going to be hard enough to stop Aaron Jones. And the Saints did a great job with that. Jones only had 9 rushing yards, and it certainly hurt my fantasy team last week that Jones only had 9 rushing yards and 13 receiving yards. But it's hard to do that once with a running back of that caliber. It's really hard to do that back-to-back weeks with a guy who I think's a better running back in Christian McCaffrey. But I do think it's going to be containing. Not stopping McCaffrey, because you're not going to be able to stop him. Let's contain him a little bit. And let's force the ball into Sam Darnold's hands a little bit more. And it sounds easy, right? It sounds easy to just to say, like, well, you know, stop McCaffrey and make Sam Darnold uncomfortable and put him in positions of third and long. Yeah, that sounds really easy, and it's almost like a no-dub. And then, like, that's how you win football games. Put guys in third and long. Yeah, I get it. Watched football a long time. I understand that. But especially in this game, taking McCaffrey away as an outlet for Darnold is going to be super important. Making sure you stop the run and don't let McCaffrey get out in open space and create just huge chunk plays. But containing him, especially in the passing attack, don't allow McCaffrey to be a true outlet for Darnold or contain that, to enforce Darnold to look down the field. I mean, you have an excellent pass rush. We know what Cameron Jordan can be for the New Orleans Saints. We know when Davenport's a go and not injured. I feel like he's just been an injury-prone guy since he entered the league. He's got everything you want in a defensive end. And Carl Granderson, who we haven't really talked about even in that week one victory. I mean, Granderson's had a great offseason. He's shown, even the last time the Saints traveled to Carolina to take on the Panthers late in the season last year, the last regular season game, he showed what he could do, picked up a sack on Teddy Bridgewater and P.J. Walker. But that's going to be a huge thing. Take McCaffrey away, trust those defensive ends, trust that interior of the defensive line. That's, you know, we thought that was going to be a big issue as well, at least I did, not having Onyemata, but they showed out and they played really well in week one. I feel like a broken record. Everyone played well in week one, but if you can make sure McCaffrey's not an outlet play after play after play, and you can force Darnold to be uncomfortable and trust that defensive line to get there and put some pressure on him, I don't see the Panthers going out and being a team that's going to put up 21-plus on you if you're able to do that. And I've said it for years and years and years. With Sean Payton's offense, if a Saints defense can hold a team under 20 points, I really like their chances of winning a football game, because I think with the Payton offense and how many weapons the Saints have had over 5 years, I can rely on them to score 21 points. And my third and final key to victory, Tony Jones Jr. What? Yeah, I know. But I just talked about in the opening, opening one of my keys to victory, and that was getting receivers involved, because you know the game plan is going to be for Alvin Kamara coming out of the backfield. It's also going to be for Alvin Kamara on the ground. I mean, let's face it, Kamara had 23 touches in week one and could certainly be a guy that averages somewhere around 25 touches a game. But look at what Tony Jones Jr. did. 11 carries, 50 yards. Yeah, that's nothing super impressive that jumps out at the screen at you. For my fantasy football players, that's not even really good enough to be a flex option. Let's be honest. And I think there's a lot of hype around Tony Jones as a fantasy option. I was like, I just don't see it right now, especially with Kamara and the touches that he's going to get. But I think the key to victory is going to be Tony Jones. And what does he do with those carries? And what does he do with carries that could be very important in the game? Now, last week didn't see too many situations where he had to carry the ball in really important situations. A lot of those carries came late in the game when the game was in hand. But as his role continues to grow as a second-year player, and really it's almost like a rookie season for Tony Jones. He was only active for one game last year. It was the Week 17 victory in Carolina, and he only got 3 carries. So this really is, though, it's a second year in the NFL. He's not considered a rookie. It's his first year with meaningful snaps, and his first year off the practice squad, full year off the practice squad. So as he continues to grow and mature into this role as the number two running back, which lots of people did not see happening, I think Latavius Murray was the biggest surprise cut of the offseason. As Jones' role continues to grow, he's going to be trusted with more carries and more snaps in meaningful situations. And this could be a game, because Doesn't matter if the Panthers are good or bad. Doesn't matter if the Falcons are good or bad. It doesn't matter if the Buccaneers are good or bad. Anytime you play a divisional opponent, it's going to be a difficult matchup. I mean, these teams see each other twice a year, every year. You know a lot about each other, even when there's new coaches, even when there's some different personnel. You know a lot about what these teams like to do. So, if the game plan for the Panthers is to take Alvin Kamara away as much as possible, put pressure on Jameis to make some plays, and maybe put some pressure on Jameis to be frustrated and force some tight passes, you're also going to force the Saints to try to hand the ball to a guy with not a lot of experience if you're taking Kamara out of the game. So how does Tony Jones Jr. respond to that? And is he capable of being a guy that averages 4-5 yards a carry for you throughout the course of a divisional matchup? Because if he can, it's going to be a change of pace. It's going to keep the Panthers on the field for long stretches, just like the Packers. Get some guys with their hands on their hips, hands on their knees, just being tired. Remember, the Saints had 15 play drives resulting in touchdowns against the Packers. I'm not saying they're going to go do that again, but you can see when you wear a defense down and you're not picking up these huge chunk plays, but it's rather 4 yards here, 5 yards here, 3 yards here, that you can really control possession and you can control what you want to do offensively. And the more that Tony Jones Jr. grows, the more that the New Orleans Saints are able to control time of possession, control the ball, and ultimately have a defense on their heels so much that you're able to really pick any play in the playbook. It's going to open up play action. It's going to open up shot plays. And it's going to make the New Orleans Saints really dangerous. Well, guys, that's all the time we have today. Really excited to get a chance to talk with you yet again. Super thankful for all of the listeners, all of the reviews, and all you guys that have just tuned in every week since I've taken over the podcast. It means a lot. I know how much you guys, you loyal listeners, really loved Andrew. And we're excited to have Andrew pop in every now and again to give some life updates and talk about the team. So I'm very grateful you guys have welcomed me with open arms. If you want to continue to follow me and my work personally, you can head to my Twitter. It's at BTBoylan, at BTBoylan. Again, you can follow all of my Saints work with the Saints News Network. They're on SI.com at SI.com/NFL/Saints. We'll be talking to you guys early next week, recapping week number 2 as the Saints look to move to 2-0 after Sunday's matchup in Charlotte, North Carolina, Bank of America Stadium at 12 Central against the Carolina Panthers. Well, guys, as always, find your peace, spread love, practice positivity, and we'll see you next time here on the Who Dat Discussion.